Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Brandon Triangle on the Left of Straight Radio Network, a safe space for LGBTQ guests, listeners, and allies to come in and share in the conversation as we bring you the latest in news, politics, entertainment, and stories from the community in the United States and around the world. And now, without further ado, the Brandon Triangle bringing you all points of view. Welcome back to the Brandon Triangle. Today is Sunday, the 24th of September, 2017. We're successfully made it through our first show, and we are on to our second episode. So we have some very special guests with us today. We have the Gady Bunch. We have Chris and Tammy from the Gady Bunch. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's great to have you here, and we're going to have co-host Roddy Biggs join in for this conference. Welcome to you as well, Roddy Biggs.
Thank you, Brandon. It's always great to be on the air with you.
Absolutely.
Hi, Roddy. Hello, Roddy.
The Gady Bunch is a shenanigans of two moms, five kids, two dogs, and seven cats. Buckle up, it's never a dull moment with this bunch. So we're on a different network here. We're on the Left of Straight Radio Network, so let's start there, ladies. What is the Gady Bunch? Tell us a little bit about your family and what makes this such an interesting experience. You have quite the social media presence.
It is insanity. It's actually a blessing. We're a blended family. Tammy brought three kids, three older children, and I brought two younger children to the marriage when we married legally. It's interesting because everybody has their own personalities, and everyone kind of, I guess the most important part of the whole dynamic of our family is that, like, we all chose to love each other. We didn't have to. I didn't have to love her kids as if they were my own blood and flesh, and she didn't have to love, my children as if they were her own blood and flesh, but that's how we are. There's no such thing as a stepsister or a stepbrother or stepmom or another stepmom. We're just a family unit, and, we don't put labels on ourselves. We're just a normal family doing normal day. Well, I wouldn't say normal, but I mean, for the most part, what I'm saying is we do, I get up every morning, I go to work, I support the family. My wife stays home and supports the family unit at home. And, I think that's what's so amazing about our family. And I like to share it with everybody because I think people have some sort of, stigma about, gay parent, gay couples raising children, and how it, diversely affect the children in a negative way. And I mean, honestly, our kids are just
very well adjusted.
We're very well adjusted and just amazing, amazing children. And we're not saying that because they're mine, because they're ours, because trust me, I would totally let you know if our children are complete, not nice people, but because that's how I am. But I mean, they're just great kids. Like they stand up for what they believe in. They don't judge anybody by, whatever it is, creed, sexual orientation, nationality, color of their skin, they honestly just have nothing but love in them for humanity and wanting peace.
Beautiful.
And wanting people to get along. And,
it's important to teach your children those values, and we've always raised them with those values.
Yeah, we've raised them with those values, and or else we told them to get out. But, I mean, other than that, I mean, they're really, really just great children. And the family is just, you know, we have our ups and downs like in every other family. You know, we have good times, we have bad times. We have, you know, we have laughs, we have cries. We're just like a normal family. Probably insanity level a little escalated on that, but that's what makes it so much fun, and that's what gives me content to write, you know, every Sunday, because there's just never a dull moment in this house with any of these children in here.
Wonderful. Roddy, let me ask you kind of a group question here. So Roddy is a LGBT youth ambassador for HRC. So Roddy, I'm sure you would agree there are so many issues that are so vital right now, right, and so pertinent to everything regarding the families, LGBT youth in general. How important is it for their family unit and for their school system to be supportive of them all around? What types of questions might we like to ask them about the experience of them and their children in their school? Because I know that I have a few.
Yeah, absolutely. So with everything going on, having a family like yours, for anyone, LGBTQ or not, is so important. Having an environment where children and youth can go in and be able to express themselves however that may be and be able to feel loved and accepted is number one thing. So I just want to say thank you for doing that for your children, and I just wish more parents would do that for theirs.
Yeah, so do we. I mean, I feel like it's very important for people, LGBT or, you know, heterosexual parents to raise their children that way. Unfortunately, it's not the way it is. I'm hoping that the children of the future, the adults of the future, being raised now where kids are more accepting of one another. I mean, at least, and I know in the schools where our children go, there's diversity and
there's a very strong gay straight alliance in the school district that our children go to.
Yeah, it's really great. I can't say it's like that everywhere, and I'm sure it's not. I'm sure there's still a lot of, you know, bullying going on, and you know, our children stand up for other kids in school who are getting bullied. Our daughter had won an award for standing up against bullying actually in school, and we really have no problem as far as parent-teacher conferences where we're looked at differently as opposed to 5 years ago. We've seen a difference where, you know, we went to a parent-teacher conference for our son Michael, and one of the teachers would not acknowledge Chris because...
I don't know why. I'm quite charming.
She is.
You told me about this on a prior interview. That's right.
Yeah, and, you know, now, to be honest, there's not even a blink of an eye. It's just they're very accepting. Actually, last time we went to parent-teacher conferences, there was something on the outside of the classroom.
Yeah, there was an LG. It was a rainbow sticker, and it had said LGBTQ safe zone.
Safe zone, yeah.
So, you know, which comforts us. You know, I mean, like I said before, and to add to what my wife was saying, like I don't. You know, we don't put labels on ourselves. We never sat our kids down and said, okay, mom is a lesbian and, you know, mommy is a lesbian and, you know, we're called gay. We never sat our kids down like that. And we didn't feel a need to. We don't feel a need to put a label on ourselves to be proud of us being a part of a community. You know, I think it's just important that people acknowledge that, you know, just because, you know, you're classified or people want to classify you as being, you know, homosexual or gay or lesbian or androgynous or, you know, pansexual, you know, drag, you know, whatever, all the names are out there. And yes, people like to identify with those, and that's fine. But, you know, ultimately, at the end of the day, we're all human. And we all live the same life. It doesn't change just because you're two women or you're two men or you're a drag couple or it doesn't change. It is what it is. We all have the same blood running through our veins. It's just, it's just how we were born, and I'm sure that could be debated, and let them debate. I mean, I don't entertain that kind of stuff. I'm concerned with, my family and showing the world that my family, as different, our family, as different as it is still a normal family.
Well, that's, we feel that that's what LGBTQ youth need to see as well, that, they will have, and they can have a future living a normal life, as a married couple with someone and having children.
I have a question, and I know, and I've talked with you several times. It sounds like the schools that your children go to are a wonderful exception to some of the stories that we hear and are reported by the orgs. But so when you've got children of LG parents, is that something that also gets addressed in the schoolroom and by the school's Gay Straight Alliance so that they don't get in any way ostracized, like the same way as if they themselves were LGBT? Is that issues that they're addressed?
I mean, I'm sure that they do address that. I mean, we've never come across it in the school district that they're in. Like, I mean, we walk in there, and we're just immediately accepted. And, we're told what a wonderful job we do with our children and how well respected our children are.
Yeah, also, our children have, told their friends and they're not embarrassed of it or anything, or feel that it's something that they would get made fun of. They're very open about the fact that they do have two moms and they've never had any issues with other children making fun of them or anything else. So I think that's great.
I mean, I think what's funny is that our little guy, he's the youngest of the bunch, and he's going to be 10 next month, along with two of our twins. We'll be 21. But we were talking with him, and his friend was like, which mom is picking you up? And he said, my mom. And he goes, the one with the really cool hair or the other mom? And he said, my other mom. And he was like, oh, he's like, that's cool. He's like, your mom has really cool hair. Because I'm just me, so I express myself differently than my wife does. But, I thought it was cool because he's 10. These are like 9-year-olds and they're talking about it,
having two moms wasn't like even an issue. It was about, who has the cool hair.
Who has the cool hair, And I mean, even with our teenage daughter, like her friends have said, I wish I had two moms. Like
she gets that a lot,
She gets it a lot, actually. Like, her friends are like, wow, I wish I had two moms. Like, so it's not, we're honestly really, really blessed with the support system that, we have in the school system with, having two children, a teenager and a younger child in school. Our youngest guy he's diagnosed with ADHD. So, we had IEP meetings and everything with him and it was never an issue. It was like we're constantly being kept, in the loop and like, oh, hey, can't wait to meet you at parent teacher conferences. And, so, I mean, it's just really, really amazing. And unfortunately for us, we're blessed. And what we're trying to show is that like, it could be like this for other LGBT kids, especially the ones that are, aren't accepted, by, whether it's their family or their schools or whatever that, we weren't always accepted either, but we, just kept putting out there that we're a normal family. I mean, I've been doing this blog for 7 years. Like, we've been the Gaty Bunch for 7 years. So, that's just what the message that we kept putting out over the 7 years is how normal we are.
Yeah, and we've actually had a lot of feedback from young people who have inboxed us and said, you know, we love you guys. I love you guys. I hope one day I can have a family like this. And it makes us feel good that we're, you know, giving a positive message out to young kids.
I mean, just on a side note, we were a Woman Crush Wednesday on Instagram to McMaz. A little shout out to her because I've never been a Woman Crush Wednesday. I mean, to my wife, I always am. But I thought that was pretty cool. Like, we, you know, she posted a picture of both my wife and I and put her WCW of the week. And, I mean, it's flattering. It really is because, you know, you don't think that you're making a difference and you don't think that you're making a change. You know, obviously Twitter and our Instagram are strong social media are strongest sources of getting our message of social media. You know, and I have to give credit to my wife because she runs the social media. So, you know, she's always finding stuff to post and she's always making sure she responds to people on Twitter and responds to people on Instagram and, you know, while I'm at work. So I have to give her credit for keeping the social media up and keeping the presence on social media, because if it wasn't for her, I don't think we would have a strong presence on social media.
And the blog is just, you know, Chris's whole outlook on the craziness that goes on and the chaos. So, you know, and people love it. They love it because it's just taking situations and things that kids say and or things that happen, whether it be, you know, at home or parent-teacher conferences or family events. It's great because, you know, she puts a funny twist on it and people love it. I mean, if you can't have levity and you can't have humor in life, you know, what do you have?
Of course. Now, I wouldn't ask, and I want to give Roddy a chance to ask too, but and I think we've talked about this before, but is it difficult, both as members of this community and as members of a family unit, surviving this time politically, just citing different ways in which many of us feel like our community is under attack? Like right now, Education Secretary Bessie DeVos is working on repealing Obama-era Title X protections. So there's a transgender ban in the military that has been proposed. It is under review right now. So there are lots of ways in which our community as a whole is feeling like we're taking these giant steps backwards. Do you feel in the same way, like we're under attack or we need to hold our ground? Like, what are your feelings right now politically?
Well, I mean, I don't bite my tongue for anybody. So I'm certainly not going to bite my tongue for whoever's in the White House right now. So, I mean, my opinion is this. Yes, I do feel that the community is under attack. And I do feel that, you know, peaceful protests need to continue. I don't stand behind any form of violent protest. Not my nature, but I do believe in civil disobedience. I truly do. And I think that the only way to ever make a change is to have civil disobedience in a peaceful way. I personally don't like him. That's my personal opinion. I think that he has no idea what he's doing. I think that he's going to cause the next world war. I actually just went on a rant on my Twitter, my personal Twitter page, responding to some of his absurd tweets. And I'll tell you what, if he wants to ban transgender in the military, he should probably step back and take a look at the fact that he never defended our country because he had heels first. So that just goes to say what type of man he is. You have transgender people in our military fighting, putting their lives on the line every single day for the freedom that he gets to deserve. And he needs to acknowledge that instead of hanging with white supremacists and encouraging them to continue the BS that they're, you know, creating by coming out of the woodwork since he's been in the office.
Deep.
You know, if this offends anybody, I don't apologize. So, because that's just me. I personally think that he's worse than Hitler. I think he's worse than Mussolini. I think he's the Antichrist, and I honestly believe that, you know, his supporters that were supporting them, unless they're white supremacists, are now literally sitting at their kitchen table, shaking their head, going, "What the hell did I just do?" Whether or not they want to admit it, that's fine. But back
some
to
do.
The, I'm sorry.
So some
they
have.
Do.
privately,
yeah.
And maybe not publicly.
Yeah.
Can I ask, just to get a perspective real quick on Roddy, with HRC and the other organizations that you work with, under Obama and even the years before, all of those organizations had people in the White House that they were talking to. From what I've literally been told privately, there's no dialogue going on between this White House and, like, Human Rights Campaign, Trevor Project, any of the orgs. Can you confirm that? Like, is the White House closed off to communication with LGBT orgs?
From what I've been told and from the people who I've talked to, that is absolutely true, because, like, Sarah McBride, who is HRC's National Press Secretary, been invited to the National Correspondents' Dinner. She was at the White House when Obama and other presidents were in office, and they are pretty much being kept in the dark, but thanks to certain people's obsession with Twitter, we know exactly what's going on. So we are able to get inside and get in there, even if we're not allowed to walk into the press conferences like we used to.
That's really horrible.
I mean, it's what I find very disgusting is the fact that he wants to, besides, the transgender ban, which I find absurd. I just find it completely absurd. Being transgender is not going to stop you from doing what your duties to this country. It's not going to stop you from doing that. But what I find even more interesting is that, he likes to refer to the white supremacists as very nice people. But yet anybody of a different skin color who kneels because they don't feel that they're a part of this country can get called sons of bitches. And I'm sorry, I'm not sure if I could say that on the radio.
Yeah,
but
you can. You sure
okay.
can. And he did. And he did. Some networks bleeped it and some let it roll.
Yeah, and he did, and I tweeted him about it, and it's funny because I've never seen him since he's been in the White House put his hand on his chest when the national anthem was being played. So, he's a hypocrite. And as far as I'm concerned, I go to my son's football game, and I don't feel comfortable putting my hand on my heart because I don't feel like I'm a part of this country. And it has nothing to do with the veterans or the people that have lost their lives on the front line. Or, I have very good friends that were in the military, did 9 tours in Afghanistan, and I respect him more than anything in the world. But me putting my hand on my heart when the national anthem is playing, I'm thinking about, we're supposed to be united as a country, and you're tearing it apart by allowing white supremacists to come out of the woodwork, which, is distasteful in itself.
And then actually kill someone and not even acknowledge it.
Yeah,
let's acknowledge
the NFL. I mean, really, let's get over it. Somebody needs to, literally put him in timeout, and he treat him like a child and put him in timeout and take him off of Twitter because, he offends everybody. He offends thousands of people every second he tweets. It's ridiculous.
Right.
I can't deal with him. My goal for the remainder of 2017 is to get blocked by him. And if I have to continuously feed him, I will do that because I think he's a menace to society and to this country, and he just needs to go somewhere else. I mean, honestly, put him on an island with his wife, because she doesn't stand in the shoes of
First Lady
Obama at all, because
right.
That was a classy first lady. And this is nothing about Republicans or Democrats. I personally thought Ronald Reagan was a great president. I thought, he did a great job. I think, it's about the people that you're choosing to put into the White House. I mean, it's at a point now where I was driving down a highway, and behind me was a Nazi skinhead with nine Confederate flags all over his truck. And the only thing I can think of was like, wow, buddy, you're slightly obnoxious. And here I am driving with my Human Rights Campaign sticker on the back of my car, and I'm like, I want you to do something because I think it's funny. Like, you know, what's the point of driving around with a Confederate flag?
To show their hate, show hatred, because that's what they do. And, it's their freedom, but the point is that with him in the White House, he's making them feel very secure enough to do
yeah.
that. he's making the KKK feel very secure, making statements like they're going to kill gay people. This is insane. This is not what this country, where this country should be at this point in time. We should have evolved.
And there's lawsuits, and Roddy, you're welcome to weigh in on this, but HRC, represented by Lambda Legal, and OutServe, you know, SLDN, has got a lawsuit against Trump's transgender military ban. The ACLU filed suit. So our community is not letting this ban go through without a fight. Do you have any comments on that, Roddy?
Yeah, so there's that one that's going on. There's also one in Birmingham, Alabama, that they're filing an ordinance complaint against. There was one in Arizona that actually just turned in favor of LGBTQ parents. So LGBTQ parents now have both legal, but they both have legal rights, state of Arizona, for children, which is kind of ridiculous that we even had to have that suit to begin with. But it's good to see that that one turned in favor. But there are countless fathers in every single state that are either directly for the White House administration or are a result of what the White House administration has and has not done for protection of LGBTQ people.
Yeah, it's you know, I mean, our children were concerned, you know, when they hear on the news, they're concerned when they hear, oh, the KKK, they want to kill gay people. I mean, our daughter's married to Jamaican, our daughter's, I'm sorry, slip of the tongue, we're hoping. But our daughter's in a 4-year relationship with a Jamaican man who's an amazing guy. And she, you know, she's afraid. And I mean, it's not the world that we should be living in. It's not the world that our children should grow up in.
Right.
You know, this shit took place in the 40s and the 50s. We're in 2017. It needs to stop. Period. End of story. It needs to stop.
We're taking giant steps backward.
Yeah. You're not supposed to take a step backward. Yeah. You're not supposed to go back to the past. You're supposed to move forward and make things right. I mean, you know, I just saw a tweet from him the other day that he was going to Alabama because there was a great crowd, and I'm pretty sure I can, you know, imagine what crowd, and I'm not bashing Alabama at all. I'm just saying I can imagine what crowd he's going to see. But, you know, my response to him was, well, when are you going to visit Florida? When are you going to visit Texas? When are you going to visit Puerto Rico? When are you going to visit the Caribbean islands that are demolished, that had their lives wiped away, that people in the States now still can't find people that they love? When are you going to go there? You're not, because you're a douchebag. So, I mean, honestly, it's appalling. I mean, and anybody that stands by this man, in my opinion, is a promoter of hate and war and violence. And honestly, it's just not the way that 2017 should be, or 2018 or 2019 or 2020, and so on and so forth.
Right.
Putting him in the White House did exactly what you said. It was a giant step back for us and for a lot of people, not only LGBTQ people, just also, you know, people of color, different nationalities. I mean, it's just, you know, it's horrible.
Here's the bottom line. The Gaty Bunch stands behind every single nationality, every single color of their skin, every single creed, every single sexual orientation. We stand behind every single person that is being discriminated by the president. I won't even recall. I'm sorry. I retract that statement. I don't refer to him as the president.
Yeah, he's not our president.
He's definitely not my president. And I do have a T-shirt that says hashtag not my president.
The bully in chief.
Yeah, I just want the listeners to know that we stand by every single person that is being discriminated against in this world today. We will continue to do what we do and how we do it. To whatever extent it takes. And trust me, it's exhausting. My wife, you know, she deals with four kids, oldest one is off on his own. You know, my wife had a 2-level cervical fusion a year ago, and is still trying to recover from the fusion. And, you know, she deals with these kids all day long, and as exhausted as she is, she still manages to put up positive messages of hope and of love and peace. And, you know, and my objective when I get home is to make the blog, you know, first of all, there's nothing fabricated in the blog. It's all true stories, which is interesting in itself. And to make it as real as possible, and, you know, to show levity in the situation, and to show the, you know, to just to show the world, we're not going anywhere. I'm not going anywhere. Yeah. If he wants to sign, he can sign whatever bill he wants. You know, I mean, he can sign whatever bill he wants, and I can tell you right now without getting, you can probably bleep this out, but whatever bill he writes, I'll wipe it with my ass, because honestly, he's not going to change the fact that I am married to a woman and that I have 5 children, and he's not going to take that away from me. And if he does try to take it away from me, then he'll have to fight with me, because I am not allowing my family.
We shouldn't have to change. You shouldn't have to change. I shouldn't have to change loving a man. None of us should have to change.
No. Nobody has to change. Nobody has to change for this man. Nobody, because he's nobody. You know, he's nobody. And, you know, I love the fact that every time there's an award show, it becomes political. I love it. I love the fact that nobody cuts him some slack, because he doesn't deserve it. He doesn't deserve it. He didn't deserve to win. He was not the better candidate. Okay, and as far as I'm concerned, I really don't care what bill he puts in place. It's not going to change me. It's not going to change my wife.
It's not going to change our community.
It's not going to make me less gay. It's not going to change our community, and it's certainly not going to change my family, because my family is my life, and I will protect my family. So he needs to tread lightly when it comes to gay community. He needs to tread lightly when it comes to, you know, the Muslim community,
yes,
the African American community, the Hispanic community, anybody that's not white with blonde hair and blue eyes, he needs to tread lightly with.
All right, I'm going to give Roddy Biggs the final question for these ladies. Roddy, any final question?
Not really, but like I said, I just want to really thank y'all for everything you do for the LGBT community, for everything you do for your own family, and for just being that positive light that so many LGBTQ youth need, because they're not getting it from someone. So honestly, just keep up the great work. You're doing a fantastic job, and it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. Same here. I just want to say one really quick thing. If there's any LGBT youth out there that has any type of negative feelings about themselves or any negative feelings about their life, I encourage them to come to us. I encourage them to inbox us, whether it's on Instagram or it's on Twitter, you know,
or Facebook.
We respond immediately. You know,
we want to be there for LGBTQ, definitely.
You know, I've been there, you know, I've been there with my blood relatives. I know what it's like. My wife has been there. You know, we have children.
Many of us
we had a child that was bullied, you know, so we know, and we encourage every single person to come to us and talk with us.
Whether they're children or adults.
I mean, you know, we're all about the positive. We're all about, you know, keeping the community here.
We're family. Our community is a family.
They can't do anything. We can't do anything as a community if we lose people.
What's the website URL for the listeners?
Well, our Gaty Bunch handle, well, I'll give you the website. It's thegatybunchfamily.com. That's our website. That's where we have the blogs that get posted on Sunday. Our handle on Twitter is at Gaty Bunch, and our Instagram is Gaty Bunch Family. So I encourage everybody to follow us on, you know, Instagram and Twitter. Facebook, we're not really too active, but, you know, mostly Instagram and Twitter, because, you know, we get personal on Instagram, and we get personal on Twitter. So we encourage everybody to follow those, you know, go up Gaty Bunch Family on Instagram, at Gaty Bunch on Twitter, thegettybunchfamily.com, those three places, you know, sign up, get the, you know, sign up so that you get the blogs, leave us comments, you know, talk with us. If you're going to put hate comments out, you're going to get blocked and deleted, so don't even waste your time. So that's what we encourage for anybody in the LGBT community, anybody that feels discriminated, whether they're Muslim, you know, Black, Spanish, whatever the case may be. You know, hit us up on all three of those, and let's connect and fight the minion in the office.
Oh, awesome. All right, Chris and Tammy from the Katie Bunch, thank you so much for spending a few minutes with us here on the Brandon Triangle. And Roddy Biggs, thank you for your assistance.
Thank you for having
thank
us.
Thank you for having us. It's always a pleasure. Both of you, enjoy.
Be well to you and all of your family. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
What is it like for you to be playing the first openly gay character in the Star Trek series?
What we do in our show is we hold the banner for diversity by just being ourselves, not by having shows that are about those issues per se. You see my character in a relationship with my partner, who's a man, and there's no commentary about it, and there's no issue about it among my captain or my crewmates or anything like that. It just is. And at the same time, it's the first time that's ever happened on Star Trek, so that in and of itself is holding a banner. So it's an honor, but it's also one of the things I'm really thrilled about is that it's sort of like no big deal is made of it.
There's a new canon in the Star Trek universe, everyone. It debuts today, September 24th, on CBS and All Access. The series is called Star Trek Discovery, where it'll make its long-awaited debut. And the show will indeed feature a same-sex couple played by two cast members of Broadway's Rent. Best known for originating the role of Mark Cohen in the hit musical, Anthony Rapp will star as Lieutenant Stamets. He's a fungus expert and a Starfleet science officer who happens to be gay. Okay, and joining the cast as Stamets' love interest is Wilson Cruz, who succeeded original Rent star Wilson Germain Heredia in the role of Angel on Broadway. The news got a special stamp of approval from George Takei, the actor who originated the role of Hikaru Sulu in the original Star Trek. But if you recall, Takei was less than thrilled after learning that his character would be portrayed as a gay man in 2016's Star Trek Beyond, which was intended to be a tribute to Takei. So this time around, he's given his stamp of approval. Just to be clear, he tweeted, "Thrilled to hear that Star Trek Discovery will feature an openly gay couple and how far we've come." So let's start there. On the show with us right now, we have Left of Straight owner and host Scott Fullerton. Scott, welcome.
Thank you very much, Brandon.
And we also have our go-to Star Trek expert, longtime friend of the show, Special Agent Jay from Corvallis. Jay?
How's it going?
Well, I'm going to throw the first question to you. What do you think? This is an open discussion, but what do you think about the openly gay officers on the crew of Discovery, and what do you think about the show in general? I know we haven't seen it yet. We'll put that disclaimer out there.
All right, then. Well, this isn't the first time that Trek has efforted the idea of having a gay character on as one of the main crew members. When The Next Generation was being developed, it was toyed about that Geordi might actually be gay, and I don't remember exactly who, so I'm not going to quote said individual. But it was one of the original producers, and as they were going through the character bios and who these people are, what their backgrounds are, it was suggested that maybe Geordi actually might be gay. And someone piped up and said, "Well, okay, so wait a minute. You want a Black, blind, gay man. How many more disabilities do you want this guy to have?" That's literally what they said. So they dropped that idea. And, you know, Gene Roddenberry had actually toyed somewhat with the idea of a sexually ambiguous character in the original series, but CBS, of course, they're like, "Okay, we've already given you enough leeway. You do that, you're gone." So it's not necessarily a new concept to the Star Trek franchise, but this is the first time it's going to be realized, I suppose you could say, in one of the series. Obviously, we've seen in Beyond, you know, and even then it was just very subtle. It wasn't necessarily blatant. It was just like, "Oh, okay," and Kirk gives this knowing little wink and a grin, and that's that. It wasn't a big to-do. I really don't understand why Takei was a little upset. I actually can't understand, because it seems like they were kind of capitalizing over the fact that, "Oh, gosh, Takei actually is gay, so let's make the character gay, too." And I can understand why you'd want to distance reality from fiction. And, you know, he is Sulu. He always will be. And, you know, I can understand wanting to be, to take ownership of that character. But it'll be curious to see what they do with Discovery. I mean, I don't expect anything too graphic Game of Thrones-like or anything like that. But I do expect them to push some boundaries and, you know, not necessarily normalize it. Let's not put that in quotes either. But to introduce that it's not something that we've cured. It's not a disease. It's just something that is. And, you know, it's just that's how it is.
Okay.
Yeah, I actually put on my social media a couple of weeks ago. I was a little upset because they promoted one of the promos for it or one of the articles on it, and they said, meet Star Trek's new gay relationship, Wilson Trisden. It's like, okay, we're talking about the future. Do we really have to use the word gay to describe this? Can't we say, let's talk about can we just talk about the relationship? I think once they get the stars' names, they're going to realize that it's a same-sex relationship. But just that we have to still call it the gay relationship kind of turned me off a little bit, and I posted a little bit about that. I think it's kind of silly, especially in a future set show.
So, Scott, I suspect that you've been living long and prosper as long as I have. So if we look at Roddenberry's vision for the series and how future-leaning it was, keep in mind that I just saw Wrath of Khan in the theater the other day, and Kirstie Alley's character is continuously referred to as Mr. Savick. Take her out, Mr. Savick. So it was sort of like a gender bending, like, what? All the women are referred to as Mr. We haven't had a gay character. So I do want to redo this. Rap is quoted as saying, but in this case, we actually get to see me with my partner in conversation in our living quarters. You get to see our relationship over time treated as any other relationship would be treated. So in a sense, we're kind of talking about like the Troy and Riker. Maybe this is a backstory. Maybe this is just a nonchalant. This is what they do in their off hours. But what do you think? What do you think we're going to see here?
Well, and I think Wilson has said the same thing. Wilson is saying it's going to show the balance of a Star Trek medical. He plays a medical officer, and his duties to the ship and his duties to his husband and his home life. So I think they are going to address that pretty head on, which is nice to see. I don't think it's going to be whitewashed. It's not probably, I don't know if it's going to be like the featured couple out there. I don't want to make it sound like this is what all the new Star Trek is about. But I think it's not going to be whitewashed, and I think there's going to be scenes totally representing the community and this relationship, which I think is a good thing. And like you said, we had the 35th anniversary of Wrath of Khan. It had some defining moments there. And I think you're right. I think this is – Star Trek has always been about equality, about finding new civilizations, I think meaning among us and among the stars. So I think this is very much keeping in Roddenberry's wishes.
Okay. Jay, just looking back at what Star Trek has been and, you know, aspired to be, first and foremost, within the boundaries of network television, we have to always remember that, you know, when Trek hit the air in 66, Roddenberry was both limited and given a certain amount of artistic license, but you still had to meet the they have the first kiss between, you know, Kirk and Uhura, you know, a white captain and a black officer, you know, that set television boundaries. Where I'm going with this, do you think that television audiences will be okay with this? Have we normalized the gay, you know, basically label enough to the point where television audiences will accept this? And also, I want to hear your comments about this all access. Like, apparently you have to pay for a subscription to watch this series. Is that true?
Well, to answer your first question first, have we normalized it? I would certainly hope so, but again, I really don't like using that word because, you know, from my perspective, it is normal. It's everyone else, you know, seeing it, you know, through that window. I think what it has become is, it's just kind of a meh, who cares anymore? And why should we really? You know, it's something that is, and it's not going away. And the sooner we accept it and just, whether you agree with it or not, I mean, I don't necessarily agree with Republicans, but I don't see them necessarily going anywhere tomorrow.
right.
I have to live on the same planet with them and breathe the same air. So, I mean, why can't we all just get along? I think what it will do, since Star Trek has kind of been regenerized as of the J.J. Abrams iterations, I mean, he made it cool and sexy and flashy and kablooey and, you know, the first two turned out pretty good. The third one, I wasn't, I kind of, I don't own that one on Blu-ray, let's put it that way. But
would you pay $5.99 a month for like a CBS All Access app just to watch a series that has yet to be proven to us? I mean, I have to make that decision in the next day or two if I'm going to pay for the app. I mean, they're basically tasking us with how much do we love Star Trek and how much money are we willing to pay to get it, aren't they?
Well, you know, if you think about it, you're paying a subscription to watch Game of Thrones, too, because a lot of people don't necessarily watch most programming on HBO other than Game of Thrones. I mean, that's what they're paying for the most part. But what I do like about the All Access thing, yes, it's $5.99 a month. You can upgrade to $9.99 a month for commercial free. Whoop-de-doo. But the nice thing about the subscription is you're under no obligation. You can cancel it any time, which is what I intend to do. Once the series is over, I'll just cancel it. But in the meantime, it also allows you access to their full archive of every single episode from every single series, including the oft-forgotten animated series. And you can watch that on the go. In this day and age, I mean, people are so busy. They don't have the time to just schedule, okay, I'm going to sit on the couch and watch this as it's airing. No, they upload it to their DVR and watch it at their leisure. So it offers them the freedom to be able to watch it on the go during their commute to and from work on the metro rail or in a carpool or whatever. And, you know, if you know, the family dinner's getting too ruckus, you can excuse yourself to the bathroom and catch up on the last episode. And nobody's going to know the difference. And I really like that. Like I said, there's no obligation. But what is frustrating to me is that the United States is the only country that is requiring this subscription. Pretty much every other country on the planet, it's just going to be airing normally like it would any other show. And I think a lot of that has to do with the FCC and a lot of their strict rules. And by going through the internet, they kind of are able to skirt a lot of those rules and are able to get away with a lot more than they would otherwise. Okay. And I'm not talking about dropping F-bombs at Warp 3 or graphic sex scenes, but in terms of the violence yeah. and some of the more adult-themed storylines, which I am kind of predicting, they're taking a pretty dark approach to this. I mean, because we're talking about pretty much the birth of the Klingon Federation War, and it was, you know, from all accounts, very, very bloody, very, very brutal. And, you know, I really hope they don't pull any punches on this and just show how it is. I mean, people are going to die, and it's just that simple.
Let's find out.
My two cents worth as well, because it's a double-edged sword of the future. The CBS All Access, they started it back last year when they did the sequel to The Good Wife, The Good Life on there. They did the first episode on network TV, and the rest of the episodes were on their All Access app, and it proved to be successful for them. And like I said, it is that double-edged sword where now you're paying for a subscription service, which is going to be the wave of the future, I think, because we know Disney has pulled all of their programming off Netflix to launch their own access. I think there's going to be a lot of these mini networks, but it also, to answer your question earlier, it takes away some of those ratings, and they're not going to have to worry about going to a certain audience of what they do, like Jay was talking about. They can show some more graphic scenes, both in violence and sexuality and content. So the streaming aspect gets them away from FCC guidelines that way as well, because it is a subscription service. It's like having a cable TV network like an HBO Showtime that gets that little farther grasp. And I think that's the way of the future. I think, unfortunately, for consumers that are going to have to pay for 12,000 little apps, I think, but I think it does give the creators of entertainment now a much broader landscape to work on.
Agreed.
Have either of you decided if you're going to get and pay for this app? I'm deciding today. So I as of the time we're going to air, I have not yet paid or signed up, but I'm strongly considering it. It just also happens to be that the show airs at a time when I'm not going to be near my television. So that's another thing, is they force folks like myself, can't be there sitting in front of the TV, to go into that afterplay option. And with all the other network shows, even on my cable box, you can just put on, oh, this is what was on TV last night. I'm not convinced that they're going to do that for Star Trek. I think that the app is going to be my only shot.
Yeah, and I think that's where they're headed with it. And you are a prime example of what they're exactly talking about, because, like I said, people's schedules right now, as they are, I mean, and not just single people, but, I mean, married couples. I mean, we're not the only Trek fans on the planet. my mom, for instance, she works days. She works closing shifts where she works, and so she's not going to be available. So she and I agreed that we're going to get the all access. And my mom's the one that got me hooked on Star Trek from the beginning. You know, some parents sit their kids in front of Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers and Captain Kangaroo. My mom put me in front of reruns of Star Trek, Star Galactica. So I grew up with all that stuff. I was hooked from the beginning. I had no choice. It courses through my veins. And so what we agreed to do is, like, whenever she has the free time, I'm going to hop my happy butt over there and we're going to watch it together. And so we'll be all caught up and then we can have a discussion afterwards. Now, tonight's a bit of an exception because she's returning from a wedding up in Seattle. And so she has tonight off. So we'll be able to watch the premiere together. But beyond that, you know, it's probably going to have to wait till Monday afternoon before we can sit down and watch it together, which is totally fine by me. I'll just have to stay away from the spoilers online. And, you know, I figured out ways of being able to filter out certain keywords. So.
All right. Scott, I want to ask you about this Star Trek-like show that kicked off on Fox called The Orville. I have tried to watch an episode or two. I'm finding it very bizarre. I have in front of me a review from Fox. It says, The Orville might not be this fall's worst new TV show, but it sure is the most confusing. Have you checked out The Orville?
I've watched all first three episodes of it because I am a Seth MacFarlane fan. And Adrian Palicki, who plays his first commander and wife, I love from I'm such a comic geek.
Okay.
Of course, she was in Marvel's Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. on ABC and so many great other works. But so I'm fans of the people and Scott Grimes, who plays the navigation officer. So I'm fans of people on the show. So I did start watching it. I have to say the comic is off-putting to have the comic because they're trying to straddle some Star Trekian or that kind of a genre field and adding a lot of humor to it. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. I like that he's being bold. I mean, last week's episode, and I want to thank you for having me on while I'm on the outside. In beautiful Northeast Ohio here, so I'm sorry for the sounds, but it's 85 degrees today. It goes back to 60 on Thursday, so I'm enjoying my outside time. So sorry about that. A little side
day. Embrace it, brother. Embrace it.
But they did do on the third episode this last week, I was very impressed. I did tweet on my social media about it, that they addressed gender issues on the very third issue. They have a same-sex couple from a race that is primarily male. They're all asexual beings. And they actually lay an egg to do offspring. And the security officer, and he had to sit on his egg while it incubated. And when it came out of the egg, it was female, which is like a verboten in their culture. And the entire episode was about changing it to a male. So it was very much like transgender issues. So they very much tackled gender equality and sexuality in the third episode. So I'm really impressed with the stories they're trying to share. I'm not sure how I like the humor involved with it. It's just it kind of pulls you out of the adventure part of it. So I don't know. It's interesting. I got to say.
Jay, you're freaking loving it. I already know. Good. Take it away, brother. Tell us about the Orville.
All right. Well, it very much has that. I don't want to call it macabre, but it's a very wicked sense of humor. It's very clear that Seth MacFarlane is in this from the toes up. It's his type of humor. It's very outrageous. And yeah, at times it has kind of fallen. I kind of look at the screen with a wrinkled nose like, really? Okay. But, you know, this is Seth MacFarlane we're talking about. This is a person we've come to expect to push all the boundaries. And this is also a person we know for a fact has an absolute adoration for all things Trek. He's had almost every single living actor and alumnus from any of the series provide a voice for his Family Guy, American Dad, any of his other shows. And they also show up in some of his films, like Ted. And they are all in on the joke. And it's been said that, you know, imitation is one of the most honest and truest forms of flattery. And in this case, I see that happening. And what I also appreciate about The Orville is that it's gone back to a more episodic nature. Yes, there's this hovering threat called the Krill, which we don't really know all that much about, but there's a specific theme attached to each episode, and it's not necessarily this overarching, you know, it's not going to take a whole season to explain something, But, you know, we drop things in now and then. And, you know, as with every series, you're not going to start off knowing exactly what you're doing. You have to listen to the response and bounce ideas off of people and see, okay, where exactly do we want this to go? But, you know, the production value is top-notch. I love the cast. The timing, I think, is really great because, and there again, Star Wars is, you know, popped back up in popularity since, you know, The Force Awakens. And Star Trek obviously has a resurge in popularity. And I really like that we're not so stuck in these, you know, romantic comedies and things like that, that we're exploring these ideas in a context that is in a non-threatening way. Because, yes, like last week's episode about a girl, I was very impressed with how they approached the whole thing because it goes in front of this tribunal sort of thing where it's debated and there's a judge and there's advocates and, you know, they're cross-examining witnesses and examining evidence. And, you know, there's actually this woman who has been exiled on this planet, this alien woman of this particular species. She's been living in a cave and she comes out of this exile to explain, I'm happy the way I am. I don't need to be changed. And the whole debate is, you know, why don't we wait until this child is old enough to decide for itself whether it wants to be a male or a female? And they're saying, well, that would be risking, a whole childhood of ridicule and being ostracized, not understanding what the problem is, you know, other than you're wrong, you're different. And exploring that sort of concept, making, you know, bringing light to the fact that it's not a choice. It's what you are. It's what you become aware of as an individual, and that we should all be allowed to make that choice for ourselves. It was a really interesting examination of that particular concept, and it was very well timed, I think. It's very appropriate.
Thank you. Scott, do you think that there's any danger for any of us viewers or any viewers out there of, if you have to choose between Orville or Discovery, of liking it more than the other? It sounds like they're not necessarily in direct competition with each other, but there can't be a coincidence that they're hitting the airwaves at the same time. You know what I mean? This is someone's design.
Well, I think this is a season for this type of genre, along with sci-fi and special abilities. I mean, Fox is also doing The Gifted, which is like a Marvel Mutants type show, and they have a couple other, they're doing a ghost show as well. About called Ghosted, which is a kind of a comedy tongue-in-cheek about ghosts being in the world. So they're kind of, this is the season for that. Every season has different things. I think this season is sci-fi, kind of extra ordinary, plus they're doing a lot of procedurals for like military as well. So I think that it's just things run in cycles. And like you said, they're kind of the same thing, but they're two different offerings. You go either network television or you can go to all access on your app. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think it'll be enough room for everybody. And the, just like any television season, the good will survive and those that aren't getting the watch are going to fall by the wayside.
Well, one thing I will put out there, folks, is that I saw a trailer last night saying that my Kiefer Sutherland and his designated survivor comes back on Wednesday. And as soon as I saw that, it was like, oh, my God, you mean another show that I'm going to have to keep up with weekly, as if I had time for all of it.
One of my favorite shows.
You like Designated Survivor?
Good call. Oh, yeah, good call.
Yeah, it's basically Jack Bauer becomes president. gentlemen, I want to thank you for coming in to discuss Star Trek Discovery, its implications, gay characters, and, again, we haven't seen it yet, so I suggest that we regroup after the views and see what we think of it in the afterthoughts.
Agreed.
Sounds like a deal. Thanks for having me on the show.
All right, gentlemen. Live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper.
And we're back for our entertainment section here at the Branding Triangle. We want to welcome back to the show Delina Roberts from LesFlix.com. Hello, Delina. Welcome.
Hi, Brandon.
Thank you for joining us again this week. I understand that you have a report on some films that have debuted at the Toronto International Film Festival.
Yes, I do. The Toronto International Film Festival just wrapped up last week, and there was no shortage of LGBT titles in the lineup. That means that there's plenty of great LGBT films that are headed to screens near you in the future. So I'm going to just talk about a few that seemed pretty notable to me. The first film, My Days of Mercy, stars Ellen Page, everyone's favorite tiny Canadian and openly gay actress. The development of this film is an interesting story. Ellen Page and her real-life friend, Kate Mara, wanted to work on a film together. When they received the script for My Days of Mercy, they knew they had found their project. The pair decided to produce the film as well as starring in it. This dark drama focuses on two women who stand on opposite sides of the capital punishment issue. Ellen Page plays Lucy, whose father is currently sitting on death row. She and her siblings are anti-death penalty activists who are trying to exonerate their father. Kate Mara, on the other hand, plays Mercy, a pro-capital punishment advocate. Mercy's views are shaped in part by the fact that her father's partner on the police force was killed in the line of duty. Lucy and Mercy meet outside the prison where that killer now faces execution. Despite being on opposite sides of a very divisive political issue, the two are instantly attracted to each other. Mixing a death penalty drama with a lesbian love story seems an odd mix, but the creators see this film more as a drama whose main characters just happen to be gay. Amy Sametz also stars as Lucy's older sister, Martha. And queer Israeli filmmaker Tali Shalom Ezer directs.
Nice RV.
It's like a million years old.
RVsaurus?
Basically extinct, yeah.
I gotta get back. I stay in the den of inequity too long, the good Lord's likely to strike me down.
Come on, that's not that bad, is it?
No. Hey, I was thinking about walking into town later. Get a real drink? You wanna come?
Sure.
Don't sound too excited.
No, it's just I don't think that we're supposed to fraternize.
Oh. Right, is there a law against it?
An unwritten one.
Those are the easiest ones to break, in my experience. So just go for a smoke around it, okay? Okay. Try and muster up some enthusiasm by then.
The second film that I want to talk about from TIFF is Disobedience. Disobedience stars two powerhouse Hollywood Rachels. Rachel Weisz stars as Ronit, a successful New York photographer who returns to visit her Orthodox Jewish family when her rabbi father passes away. Rachel McAdams plays Esty, her now married childhood friend. Their reunion rekindles an attraction in this story of forbidden love in an oppressive conservative religious environment. No trailer has been released yet for the film, but interviews with the lead actresses reveal the two women have palpable chemistry. The film has gotten some buzz for its lengthy six-minute sex scene. While queer women are often suspect of lesbian sex scenes directed by men, director Sebastian Lelo did at least consult with some actual lesbians about the scene before filming, and he strived for authenticity. Lelo also wrote the screenplay, which is based on the novel by Naomi Alderman. Another great film from TIFF was Call Me By Your Name. Call Me By Your Name is a touching story of first love. Elio, the teenage son of an American professor, becomes enamored with a handsome visiting grad student named Oliver. The pair finds themselves in an unlikely summer romance set against the lush landscapes of northern Italy in 1983. Timothy Chalamet plays the young Elio, and Armie Hammer is the sensual Oliver. Luca Guadagnino directs. The screenplay was adapted by him, along with James Ivory and Walter Festino. It's based on the novel by Andre Assiman.
Mr. Perlman, thank you so much for that.
Cool film.
I can show you around.
That'd be great. Thank you.
do you do around here?
Read books, transcribe music, swim at the river, go out at night.
Sounds fun. All right, later.
Just watch. This is how we'll say goodbye to us when the time comes. Later.
Meanwhile, we'll have to put up with him for 6 long weeks.
Muscles are firm. Not a straight body in these statues. They're all curved. Sometimes impossibly curved. And so nonchalant, hence their ageless ambiguity, as if they're daring you to desire them.
Oh, to see without my eyes the first time that you kiss.
Is there anything you don't know?
Boundless by the time I cry.
You only knew how little I know about the things that matter.
Build your walls around.
What things that matter?
White noise, what an awful sound.
You know what things.
You saying what I think you're saying?
Shouldn't have said anything.
Just pretend you never did.
Nature has cunning ways of finding our weakest spot.
Call me by your name and I'll call you by mine.
All right, we want to thank Delene Roberts from Lesflix for giving us this entertainment review from TIFF. Now, by special request from Scott at Left of Straight Radio, he would like you to share a little bit with our listeners about the work that you do for Lesflix.
Sure. Lesflix is a website dedicated to films for lesbian and bi women. I cover a lot of different films, offering reviews as well as interviews and just news of things that are coming up. If you want to check it out, it is lesflix.com, and my Twitter handle is at lesflix.
Very good. All right, Delene Roberts from Lesflix, we appreciate you, as always, joining the show. Thank you, and have a good day.
Thanks, Brandon.